right when you don't need money, honey. That would certainly make her hit.
Hello, welcome to episode 6 of the Business Academic Writing Center podcast here at University College Dublin. My guest today is Dr. Julie Byrne. She's a lecturer in banking and finance. Thanks for joining us today.
No problem. You're very welcome.
I was hoping that because you have such a good publication record that you could maybe discuss your writing process with our listeners and how you get into the process. Do you have special rituals or circumstances that you need? Like what? How do you do your best writing?
Okay, well, my best writing, I find I get up very early in the morning.
How early?
Usually about 6.
Ooh,
I start
okay.
About 6, yeah. And that gives me a good run through for the day, and I tend to write pretty much straight through the day because once I get into it, I'm completely focused, shut everything out. I like to write, I think I do my best writing at home, where there's no distractions, no nothing, so I shut myself away in my office. And usually I begin to write a couple of days after I get my empirical results. So because I do finance, I'm doing econometrics and empirics, think about it for a few days before I even pick up a pen to write anything about it, so it's clear in my own head before I put anything down on paper.
So. Okay. So you have those preliminary notes to sit down so there's no terror of the blank screen when you finally get there.
Exactly. I always start pen and paper. I don't even have the computer on. I have my results in front of me. I go through it, make a few bullet points just to make sure I have everything clear.
Mm-hmm.
Then what I do is I format. I always do the introduction at the very end. So I start by doing my literature review. I already have notes on that before I do the empirics. Then I get my empirical results, see does it actually correspond to what I thought I would find. Oftentimes it doesn't, and that requires more reading to try and find an explanation why. And then I have pen and paper to sketch out what my progression is going to be. Then I write up my results, then I go back, fill in the literature, then the conclusion, and then the introduction.
Okay, and so this would be done in sort of chunks over several days or weeks?
Several weeks usually, maybe even several months. It entirely depends on the, first of all, the type of journal that you're targeting, and second of all, also whether it's individual or collaborative research. So that very much influences the, you know, length of time in the process.
Right. Getting drafts back from co-authors.
Exactly, exactly.
But when you're in your individual process and do you find that it's most helpful to break it up into chunks like that, into separate tasks? I think that that's a good way to sort of attack. So it's not just this one looming,
It's too daunting if you just try and undertake it all at one time. So when you begin, you think that you may never finish it, but if you're doing it in little pieces, so you write up the results and then that much is done, then you start on the next section and all of a sudden it starts to come together. So at the start it looks like it's never going to come together, and then all of a sudden if you approach it, you know, methodically and step by step, I find that it comes together better for me.
I think piece by piece is good advice.
So
that it helps you start and finish and keep going throughout, that you're not overwhelmed by all the things that you have to put into it.
And sometimes it is tough to keep going. Sometimes the process is slower than others. And, you know, especially if it's been a very long process, you're nearly frustrated before you even start writing. And, sometimes that ignites you again. Once you start writing, it reignites your passion for the material that looking for.
So you mentioned collaborative writing. How do you feel about that? Do you feel like your co-authors are your lifeline, or that you all bring your strengths into the project, or do you feel like it is a frustrating process?
It depends. So sometimes if you're doing collaborative writing, you're less busy at times when they're more busy and vice versa, and sometimes you're looking to get ahead and they're not ready, and then sometimes they're looking to get ahead and I'm not ready. So it tends to make the process longer, but it definitely makes, I think, a more thorough research project, because my co-authors obviously have knowledge and skills that I don't have, and hopefully I have knowledge and skills that they don't have. So I think it makes for a more comprehensive piece, but there are frustrations involved that aren't there when you're going along at your own pace and you don't have to consider really anybody else.
So one of those things where it's just there are good parts and drawbacks. But ideally, it sounds like that you've gotten there where you choose co-authors who are really sort of broadening your skill set or helping you do things that, you know, maybe are not your specialty. What I think would be ideal.
Yes, and it tends to happen that you go back and work with the same co-authors that have worked well before. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you work with a co-author and the process doesn't really work out. It just, I don't know, the styles or processes just don't match one another. And that tends to make for a very long process. But mm-hmm. oftentimes you find that you work very, very well with other co-authors and you tend to see that I'll go back again and work with the same co-authors mm-hmm. because we know exactly what each one brings to the table. So mm-hmm. That's definitely beneficial and definitely speeds up the process.
Right, it is risky.
Yes, it is.
So what do you do when you get a paper back with the peer review, the comments? What do you do? What's your process there?
That all depends on what the comments are. So there's really nothing more helpful than a comprehensive referee's report, even if it's accompanied by a rejection. Mm-hmm. Because so usually I read the referee's report and then again I think about it for a couple of days. Generally it comes with some resubmissions. Some of them are not possible to do, so you have to respond back that it's a good point but it's actually not possible to do. Mm-hmm. You know, there might be data limitations. Other times and oftentimes they raise points that I haven't even thought about before, which are very valid points which will strengthen the paper. So again, usually for finance anyway, they're given back to us 1, 2, 3, 4, and I sit down. If I'm working with the co-author, we divide them up. So if one of us did the empirics and the other one wrote it up, well then if there's further empirical work to do, that author will get the further empirics. If there's further writing to do, well then whoever wrote it up will write it up. But again, I do it as step-by-step mm-hmm. process. And in general, the comments are very, very helpful. The worst thing that happens is if you get a referee's report back that says very, very little. For example, we got a referee's report back recently said, really like it, just not for this paper.
Hmm.
And that's just not helpful at all, because mm-hmm. if they said why it wasn't helpful or why it wasn't suitable for their publication, well then we could have worked on that and sent it somewhere else, but we were left in the position that we, you know, resubmitted it as it was to a different journal, got a really comprehensive referee's report back, and then we were able to work on those. So hopefully that will be published soon because we just resubmitted it.
Oh, that's
so
great. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. So
really you need to get developmental comments
yeah.
that really help you see what needs to be addressed.
Yeah. It's also good to go through the experience as well, because then when I'm refereeing, then I know that a comprehensive referee's report is really, really important for the author. So, mm-hmm. you know, you see it from both sides of the table. So I always try and do a comprehensive referee's report if I'm working from the other side.
That's going to be the ideal reviewer.
Well, I don't know about that, but I try.
So. Okay. And what sort of advice do you give to the PhDs or the postgrads when they're negotiating big writing projects like the thesis or a dissertation for the master's level?
Okay, if you think about it as just one project, it seems incredibly daunting. It seems that you're never going to get there. I mean, we all went through it. Mm-hmm. We've all experienced this. So what I would say is start small. Start with your first idea, develop that, and if you take it step by step, what you'll see is once you have one paper done, other ideas fall out of it. Then you've got your process. The process I use doesn't necessarily work for everybody. You'll find your own process. So, you know, working at 6 a.m. certainly doesn't suit a lot of people, but once you find it, once you start small, don't think of it as an entire PhD. Think of it as one paper, one individual project, and then add to it. And then it doesn't seem so daunting and you can actually see the progress that you're making. So oftentimes you're studying a PhD for a year and you don't feel you have anything to show for it, but you do, you've been reading, you've been taking notes. Mm-hmm. Then you start with your idea, small idea, write that up. Once you've got one piece written up, you'll find that everything follows through, follows after much, much faster and much more smoothly.
That sounds like good advice.
Yeah, you've ironed out the things, but if you think of it all in one go, think I have to write this big, huge project, it just sometimes it becomes so daunting that you don't even start. You don't even put your toe in the water, you just put it off and put it off, whereas if you start small, you can, and you see your progress eventually, and you know, it gives you some heart then to proceed.
Yeah, the smaller steps or smaller papers, as you're advising, really do help build their confidence, I think, so that you're not overwhelmed by the word count, that you're, 80,000 words or 60 or what have you.
Exactly. And you get the practice of presenting, and you get the practice of submitting, getting feedback back from everybody, and it'll just make you a more rounded researcher in general. And the other thing as well, when you're writing, when you're presenting, is you will develop a thick skin over time. It can be hurtful when you're starting out if you get a report back after all the work you've put into it. You know, you get a report back, this isn't good enough. But as you progress, you'll become more confident in your own writing, in your own abilities, your own skills. And I think that comes across on paper as well.
You talked about the reviewer who didn't really offer any feedback, and that has to probably rank as some of the worst comments you could get. But what are some of the really good comments or advice you've given overall for your writing? Can you think of back when you were, you know, starting out, or when you were doing your PhD, or even from reviewers up until today?
About my writing, well, in the field that I'm in, sometimes I think the best feedback I pretty much got back, and I actually tell to my students as well, sometimes more isn't better, sometimes it's just more. So to, you know, say what you have to say, say it well, include relevant literature, but you don't need to go on for five pages, something that you can say in one. So I think that sometimes if you put in too much, that it kind of conveys that you're not very confident.
That's really interesting, Julie, that I've never heard anyone say that before, but I think that's excellent advice. Can you talk a little bit more about that? So that is it that postgrads tend to think, I need five pages to say my own name?
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So that this bluster and filler is really a hedge to say, I don't feel confident to say what I'm here to say.
Yes, exactly. If you are confident, and if you truly believe your results, you've done the research, you'll put in relevant references, but you won't kind of try to over justify what you're including, because that to me is just that, well, I'm not really sure, so I might include this, I might include this, I might include this. Whereas if you're really confident, you'll just include what's relevant and what's necessary. And of course, you have to remember, if you're a researcher, that reviewers don't just have your paper to review, they have quite a few of them. So sometimes it's annoying to read five pages if you only need to read one.
Right, it's true, isn't it? Is that part of your job as well, is to, you know, acknowledge the reader's time, and that the reader, as you say, shouldn't have to spend five pages reading to get what they could in one.
Yeah.
And that you acknowledge that they're not, you know, you're not locked in. No one is forced to read anything that you write. So you really do have to court your reader and be aware of their time and how well it reads. And so I think that that's interesting, because we don't talk about enough of how does it read? Does it sound like you have confidence or not? And I think that the students sort of, and even after that, there's this impulse where you want to hide behind all the experts, and you want to show off and say, oh, look at all the stuff I've read. But it might really not be germane to the purpose there.
Exactly. And one of the comments I actually got back was, you did an absolutely wonderful job of telling us how great everybody else's work was before you told us how great your work was.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
Switch those around, because I want to know what you're doing. It's great that you know what everybody else has done, but, you know, switch it up a bit. So the order in which you put things is really important as well. And the other thing about, sometimes people are afraid if they leave things out that the paper would be rejected, so they have a tendency to include everything. But usually, particularly in my field, if you send in a huge long paper, they'll just send it back and say it's too long.
Right.
Whereas if you put in the really pertinent points, if you've missed out one or two things, that the referee will tell you and you can go back and put them in. It's much easier to do that. I mean, obviously not really important points, they all have to go in, but if he just wants to see, you know, one other thing mentioned, he'll tell you that. Whereas if you put in, you know, tons of additional information, that's where it starts to get annoying from, you know, referee's right. point of view anyway.
It grates. And so, yeah, it's sort of showing off, but also hiding. So you're showing all this stuff, but then you're not leading with your own voice, with your own, you know, work, as you say.
So it's very, very important as well. Another thing that you learn over time is don't be shy in saying your contribution. Don't be shy in saying, yes, this is a good piece of work. Don't expect somebody else to recognize it if you're not recognizing it yourself. And it's something that did not come naturally to me. It's something that I had to work on as I became a better writer to realize that.
To have that confidence.
Yeah, so
I
think that's important. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's not like women are really raised to go around and toot their own horn to begin with and say, oh, I have this great idea.
That's exactly it. But nobody else will do it for you. Mm-hmm. It's a lesson that you learn as you move along. You know, as you gain confidence, you think, yes, maybe I really do have something to say that's just as good, if not better, as what other people have to say. And, you know, that is a skill that you do learn. You do learn that. So
wonderful.
It's confident, not cocky. So.
Yeah.
That's cocky. Very important.
It is. It's a fine line for a lot of people on recognizing that.
Yeah.
To not seem arrogant, but, you know, to just walk that confident line.
Yeah.
A full stride with, you know, good posture on the page, I think of it as sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and some of the other disciplines in business would be naturally more kind of wordy and things like that than my own discipline. So there are differences depending on what you're researching as well. So I'm solely speaking from my own discipline point of view.
No, I think that's excellent advice. So when they say they're blocked or when you're blocked, do you have any tricks or any sort of coping strategies for getting out of writer's block?
What I do is I walk away. I walk away, I do something else, and sometimes I walk away for 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks, because if it's not coming to me, it's just not coming to me. And sometimes, unfortunately, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I have the light bulb moment where
that's wonderful.
I'm unblocked. But I found before I used to panic and I just made things worse. So now I know if I walk away, eventually I'll get there. But
you just need to sit with it.
Yeah, trying to force it through just doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't. I just make things worse and start getting frustrated, and that's no approach to take when you're trying to research. So I walk away. Others don't, but that's what works for me, and eventually it comes.
Okay. I think that that's so reasonable. Instead of working yourself up into this big state of anxiety or second-guessing everything you do, that you can't really focus in that state, that it is better to just go away and do something else.
Exactly. And even before, I've had to leave a paper, go start working on another one, and come back to the paper that I left, because it just wasn't working out. And it turned out to work out beautifully, but I just got stuck to the point where I had to leave it, go do something else. And when I did something else halfway through that, so I ended up working on both at the same time, and they both worked out pretty well. But
that's good. So mental space helps get away from it.
Yeah, I think it was because I was then so focused on something else that it freed up whatever it was that was stopping me from completing the other one. So
the paper's always there in your subconscious doing something, you know, who knows what.
Yes, it will come. It will come to you. But if you try and force it, I don't think it really works. I don't think you do your best work anyway. And it's very, very difficult even to write a sentence when you're trying to force something out. Even a single sentence seems like you're trying to climb a mountain when it shouldn't be like that.
Well, that's a great analogy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the first sentence is always the most difficult one, I find, when I'm writing up a paper anyway.
No matter where that sentence goes, or
no
because you said that you write your introduction last.
And the introduction I always find the most difficult of everything. The introduction and even the conclusion, because in the conclusion you just feel like I'm finished now. But you can't really just say ta-da and move away. You have to, you know, structure it and put it together and make it inviting. And I think particularly with the introduction, that's what draws people in. Do I want to read any more? Is all going to be based on the abstract and the introduction. So the introduction is actually the most important in terms of selling your research. So therefore, I suppose you're under the most pressure to get that right, because after two pages, if you're bored, it's highly unlikely you're going to read the the rest of it.
It's true. If it's not good in the first two pages, it won't be good the rest of it, really.
Well, it might be wonderful, but I would never know because I just won't stop reading it. So
is that your test, two pages?
Yeah, pretty much. I read the introduction, and if it really hasn't grabbed me, or I'm not quite clear on what people are doing or what they expect to find, well, then I just kind of move on. So I try then to write my own introduction to invite people in.
It is an invitation though, isn't it? It's like a handshake, your introduction.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, I leave it last, and I spend probably more time than I should, because it's often a much shorter section than the main body of the text, but still, because I work by a couple of pages, and then if I'm not interested, I put it down. I just assume, even though it's probably not true, that everybody else does the same thing. So I try and make sure that the introduction invites people in, and that they know what I've done by the time they've read the first couple of pages, not what everybody else has done. So that comes from years of referees' reports coming back. So.
No, I think that's excellent advice, and that when I pick up a paper, I want to hear what you have to say, not what everybody else or so-and-so, the big names, say.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So,
and again, that anxiety to hide behind the big names instead of stepping out with your own voice and saying, this is why you're here, this is why we're here.
Yes, and it's very easy to do, because you go, you know, you say to yourself, well, I know such and such is the big name in this, so I better put their name in early. Otherwise, somebody will go, well, why didn't you mention those? But you will mention them. You'll mention them in a couple of pages' time when you're looking at what previous research has found. But it's not necessary to pad your own work and your own originality with kind of, I suppose, the comfort of, well, it's in line with what other people have found, and everybody knows that they know what they're doing, so therefore I must know what they're doing. Does it really, you don't have to do that. You should be confident enough to, but it does take time.
Yeah, it does. That's excellent advice, though. Are there any parting thoughts that you want to give to, say, new hires or new faculty just starting out in their field, especially in banking and finance?
I think that one of the best pieces of advice that I can give is that your colleagues will be very helpful. They'll be very frank. They will give you feedback. So I think the best piece of advice is to present your work, show senior colleagues your work, you know, because they're not going to tear it apart. They will criticize it, as they should, but it's all to make your research, your writing, better. And that developing a thick skin is absolutely vital if you're going to write research articles and want them published. And be patient. It takes an awful lot longer than you would like to think it does. Well, for me it does anyway. I often think I'll have something done and dusted in 3 months, and it almost never works out like that. So I think be patient and work on a smaller scale, because added up they all become a big scale, but don't try and undertake too much at once, or else you become overwhelmed pretty quickly. So I think, you know, use the knowledge of the more senior colleagues, because they've been very, very helpful for me, and I think I've become a better writer by, you know, allowing them to give their thoughts on my work. And I just think that it's made me a better researcher doing that.
So that you could look at the senior faculty as sort of the preliminary peer review, the in-house peer review before you send it out.
And they actually even provide a mentoring role to, you know, give you a bit of confidence if you're a little bit unsure, if things are not going very well, if you do have writer's block, or, you know, if you discuss with senior colleagues in our faculty, they're wonderful, and will really help you move on again. So
talking through those problems really does help. Because it's such a solitary exercise, and you can go crazy with all that stuff floating around in your head.
And sometimes, even if you're just saying it out loud, talking to somebody about it, the answer presents itself to you and you think, I can't believe I sat there for a few weeks and couldn't figure this out. And you know, often the solution will come to you, but the senior colleagues here are very good and offer very good advice for research and, you know, how things come together. So I found them helpful.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Julie. This has been great. Thanks so much for coming today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.
Why don't you write when you don't need money, honey? That would certainly make a hit.